The Amateur Hour podcast mock draft continues with the team that kind of surprised that they're picking this high, to be honest. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Sam Vecini and ESPN.com's Royce Young helping us out with the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are picking 14th in the first round. Royce, how you doing today?
I'm excellent. How are you, gentlemen?
Very well. Let's start here. You don't expect anything crazy out of the Thunder this offseason, right? Like, we're not going to see something and be like, oh, holy crap, they really just did that?
Yeah, no, I think their oh, holy crap moments came during the season. So I think that they've reached their limit on those. At least I would think so. You know, they don't really have a whole lot of room. And I get that question a lot. Like, what are they going to do in free agency? What are they going to – and they really don't have any room to do anything, quite honestly. I mean, they have two restricted free agents, Kyle Singler and Enes Kanter. I think that the team is pretty intent on keeping both of those guys. So that already has the roster, 15 guys. And then they have a guaranteed contract here with the 14th overall pick. So that would put them at 16, and that's not even counting Josh Huestis, who they took in the first round last year, who a lot of people expect to be part of the equation maybe this fall. So, you know, that's 17 players. So, I mean, in terms of something happening this summer, I guess something would have to give in that regard. Maybe it means with some of the end of the bench guys, Perry Jones or Steve Novak or somebody like that, that they have to offload to make room for new players. But in terms of them doing anything big and wild, I don't see them doing that. I think that Presti did most of his work at the trade deadline in getting Enes Kanter. I think that that's really all that they wanted to do. And now their focus is really on the draft and on re-signing him in restricted free agency.
Is there any sort of update on Durant's status and how he's coming along in his rehab?
I think he's actually getting pretty close to getting his walking boot off, which is, you know, step one, and then that'll allow him to kind of take progression into, you know, doing the next steps of his rehab. I think that I talked to Presti on the phone a couple weeks ago, and I think that the plan right now is maybe end of August that Durant is able, or mid-August, is able to get back on the court and start it, you know, kind of being clear on the direction to being cleared to play. But I mean, he's, for everything I understand, he's totally on track to be ready in training camp.
Interesting. So I guess the biggest question for them in free agency then will be Enes Kanter and whether or not they decide to give him the money that he probably will end up getting, which is going to be in the $8 to $10 million range, you would think. What are your thoughts on A, what his contract might look like, and B, whether or not you would bring him back, and whether or not you think the team will bring him back?
I think they're going to bring him back 100%. Honestly, anything short of something outrageous, like somebody stepping up and throwing max dollars at Kanter, which would just be crazy at this point, but you know, that sort of stuff sometimes happens. You know, the Thunder did not make that deal without the intention to keep him long-term. And this was not a three-month rental for them. They viewed it as being able to maximize an asset that was outgoing in Reggie Jackson and get something that's incoming. Because, you know, the Thunder had every intention on re-signing Reggie Jackson. It just that relationship obviously just completely fell apart, and Jackson wanted to get out of town, and he wanted to go to his own team, deservedly so. I mean, the guy has his own options. So, you know, the Thunder have kind of had this money earmarked for a player, you know, and this has kind of been the way it's been. Not to bring up the old sore, but I mean, this is the way it's been since they traded James Harden, was to create this sort of flexibility to have the ability to go out and keep players or re-sign players or sign players in free agency. I mean, this is kind of a spot that they've had now. You know, they were going to have Kendrick Perkins' expiring deal come off the books, but it came off the books when they traded him at the trade deadline. So they've, you know, the Thunder actually finished over the tax for the last season for the first time ever, and they're probably going to stay in the tax. I mean, I think that that's the intention of the organization. Durant and Westbrook's raises are going up, same for Serge Ibaka. So, I mean, this is something that I think that they anticipated. They've kind of tried to kind of map out these next 4 or 5 years as kind of the years that they want to quote-unquote go for it. Because, you know, this is when Westbrook and Durant come into their prime. And obviously you've got the shadow of Durant's 2016 free agency hanging over him. So, you know, I mean, all of that stuff kind of combined together. They can't really, you know, they can't really kind of play the card of, you know, the poor man's card and try to act like they don't have the dollars to keep players. They want to keep Enes Kanter. And, you know, I don't know how much that he's going to get on the open market. You know, it wouldn't shock me if he got 4 years, $44 million from somebody, because I mean, he's a really high level offensive player. He's got massive defensive issues, but people like to see the ball go in the bucket, and they like to pay for that.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense to me, honestly. And another thing that we didn't really get to see a lot of last year was Cantor playing with Ibaka, who would kind of be the perfect player, you would think, to mask his deficiencies. So
no.
do you think that that'll that's going to help him, obviously, but do you think that that can really make him a more valuable piece, especially for the Thunder?
No, that's an excellent point, because you know, I think that those two played together maybe four games. That's off the top of my head, something like that. I mean, it was very limited. And, you know, Cantor, obviously, he's slow in the defensive pick and roll. He doesn't have very good feet. It's amazing to me. I mean, especially for somebody that evaluates, you know, young players, you know, you guys know about this. It's amazing to me how you can have great footwork on one end of the floor and just terrible footwork on the other end of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a fascinating thing to me. But, I mean, Cantor, you know, it looks like he's stuck in concrete when he's defending a pick and roll. And so, you know, teams are obviously going to try to exploit that, but then having a weak side help guy like Serge Ibaka, maybe the best shot blocker in all of basketball, or at least one of the three best, to kind of come over there and clean up a lot of your problems would certainly help a lot, because those two guys together, you know, the Thunder tried to play Cantor and Steven Adams together a lot, and, you know, the Thunder's defense really slipped in the last, you know, month and a half in the season. I mean, they were probably bottom seven or eight in defensive efficiency over the last 2 months of the season. And I think the reason you could point to is after Serge Ibaka had knee surgery, then Nick Collison sprained his ankle and was out for 2.5 weeks. The Thunder had three big men that were available to them. That was Enes Kanter, who's 22 years old and not known at all as a defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Adams, a second-year player that was quote-unquote their defensive guy. And then rookie Mitch McGarry. So, I mean, in terms of your defensive interior, which I think a lot of people would say is your most important defensive place on the floor, Thunder didn't have any experience or any high-level guys really right there. So, you know, you add back into the mix the Serge Ibaka, you know, obviously Nick Collison, and then even you have Kevin Durant back to be able to play those small ball lineups as a four-man, where you can start going back to where you can switch everything and not be taken advantage of by teams that maybe go small on you. And the Thunder can rapidly improve defensively, and specifically, I think Cantor would look a little bit better himself.
The Thunder have transitioned from Scott Brooks to Billy Donovan. Now, if you haven't been exposed to him enough yet to kind of get an idea of him, don't feel the need to answer this question. You can just be honest and let us know. But what are your early impressions of Donovan so far with the Thunder?
Well, yeah, I've had a little chance to get to talk to him. I hope to get to know him a little bit better in at Summer League in Orlando. But, you know, to me, obviously, Billy Donovan is an extremely accomplished coach. It was kind of surprising to me some of the reaction that I saw, especially in Oklahoma City, when it was becoming more and more apparent that Billy Donovan was going to be the guy. That people were somehow, you know, a little bit, you know, disappointed by that. If they didn't feel like that was enough of a splash hire, or enough of a big name. I mean, Billy Donovan is a titan in college coaching. I mean, if you talk about guys that have accomplished the most over the last 15, 20 years, Billy Donovan's up there in the top, you know, five or six, I would say. So, you know, the big question is how is he going to transition into the NBA? Everybody wants to point at recent history. But I think you can point at current history and say that, look, two rookie coaches are in the NBA finals right now. I think that some of the most successful hires in recent history in the NBA have been guys that haven't had a whole lot of head coaching experience or have come off an assistant. You look at Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta is a good example. And the Thunder were never going to just recycle and go, you know, go get a former guy. They want to think outside the box. They want to go lock down their own guy. So, you know, to me, Billy Donovan, what he brings to the table, it's obviously he's a guy that he's a very forward thinker. I think that's something that Presti valued a lot, is that he's a guy that's willing to adjust his mentality. You know, you look at his Florida teams, they didn't win one way. You know, they won their two national titles with two big guys, Horford and Noah, but those guys graduated. And so in college, you know, you're forced to figure out how to play differently at different times. And then you look at his team 2 years ago, they played a whole different way. They had five seniors. They played a lot of small ball. Before that, they had Chandler Parsons, who played a lot of stretch four at times. So it's not like Billy Donovan had just this set-in-stone system. And I think that that's something that really appealed to the Thunder, was that he's somebody that's kind of a lifelong learner. He's going to adjust, he's going to evolve, and he's going to adapt.
I basically agree with all of those things. He's someone that says he likes to get up and down, but never really got the chance to do so at Florida just because his roster has never really necessitated it. But here with Russell Westbrook, with Kevin Durant, with Serge Ibaka, all of those guys are pretty mobile, even Dion Waiters to a lesser extent. They're all very mobile guys. This is a team that I think he would like to try and get up and down and probably shoot a lot of threes and – you know, play more up-tempo basketball than we saw at Florida. So he's going to be an interesting guy for the Thunder. He's especially pretty defensive principled, which I'm sure appealed to Presti as well, because I know that was one of the things that really appealed to them about Scott Brooks.
Right, and you make a great point about it. I mean, I think that Billy Donovan does prefer high-pressure, high-level, you know, high-intensity pace type of basketball. And he's going to have that ability to do it in Oklahoma City. There's no question about it. And he's saying all the right things. I mean, there's no question about it. Billy Donovan is saying the things that people want to hear, that he likes players playing in space. He likes ball movement. He likes weak side screening. I mean, all that good stuff. The type of stuff that is just, you know, easy fodder for Thunder fans that they want to hear. You know, they don't want to hear a coach sit down and say, you know, I think I want to isolate a little bit more. I want to run an offense that's really, really stalled out. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's saying the right things, and the question is, and you know, it's the million-dollar question, is can you get Russell Westbrook to do that stuff? And you know, for everything that is great about Russell Westbrook, I think that, and there's a lot of reason to be critical of Scott Brooks. There's no question about it. But a lot of what was great about Russell Westbrook is that Scott Brooks just let him be himself, and sometimes to tap into his true potential, Russell Westbrook kind of had to have the free reign of the court. And in boxing somebody like him into a system isn't always going to necessarily bring it out of him. So I don't think Billy Donovan is necessarily tasked with a complete overhaul to like redo everything. I think his job is to really just figure out a way to make sure that the five guys on the floor are well connected and understand their roles really, really well. And you know, I think that's what Steve Kerr did with the Warriors. I don't think that he necessarily just completely blew everything apart. I think that he took something and then in maximized it. I think he took what he had and because if you look at the Warriors play, I mean, you know, other than maybe the Spurs or the Hawks, no team connects five players on the floor quite like they do. And I think that that's what Billy Donovan's task is. I think that that's what Sam Presti's vision is for his team.
As we swing this discussion towards the draft pick, one thing the Thunder have done very well throughout the years to develop players. I mean, you have the occasional guys like the Jeremy Lamb and the Perry Jones III that maybe haven't reached the level you thought of, but overall, I mean, they've pretty much done a really good job developing their young players. Why does the organization do that so well, and is that something you're worried about with Brooks leaving?
I think one of the big reasons that they do it, I mean, they do have a culture that's very refined and very, very specific, and players come in and they have expectations laid out before them, and I think the Thunder are unique in that they don't put a pressure on a young player to say, like, you know, hey, you're a franchise dude. We drafted you in the lottery, or we drafted you here. We need you to be this. I think that they kind of let players kind of develop at their own pace, and they don't really you know, push them to a level where they feel like that. You know, I think the second a high draft pick starts thinking, man, am I a bust? You know, I think that's when they start to lose it a little bit. And I think the Thunder have a unique patience. I mean, you look at the way that they've used their D-League affiliate. Not many teams use it quite like they do. Even the Thunder moved it from Tulsa, which was only about 90 minutes away from Oklahoma City. They moved it to Oklahoma City last year. So, I mean, it's literally the Thunder's D-League team plays across the street from where the Thunder do. And so, I mean, there is a kind of a unique synergy there. And the Thunder don't look at that as a demotion. They look at it as you know, you send a guy down to be able to play, to be able to improve. I mean, the number of players that they've sent down, you know, Reggie Jackson, I think, is one of the best examples. He's somebody that went down to the D League and played heavy minutes there. And, you know, that helped him. Mitch McGarry was sent down there a lot this year. So, I mean, they're not afraid to do that sort of stuff. And they're not afraid to be patient and meticulous with these young players because, you know, not every player is going to walk in and be a home run. And, you know, I think if you look at the unique, you know, the guys like Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones, like you mentioned, it's tough for those type of players. And the Thunder are in a unique position that, you know, if you're a high-level draft pick, most of the time you get to walk into a team and you get to play. I mean, you get to walk in and you get to have a role. You get to know what you're going to do. for the Thunder, you come into a team and you're immediately, you know, you're fighting for a role is all you can really count on. And I think that's one of the reasons the Thunder have kind of changed their draft philosophy, trying to draft more specific role guys as of late. So I think that Lamb and Jones, who knows? Their time's not up in Oklahoma City quite yet. Maybe they still could get something out of it. I don't know what, you know, Billy Donovan obviously has done a great job recruiting players and then producing them into NBA players. So, I mean, he's got a history of being able to cultivate talent in that regard. But that definitely was one of Scott Brooks' strong suits.
You mentioned they've been drafting more specific role with how this roster is positioned. I mean, it's pretty well filled out. They have a little bit of everything. Could you see them going back to maybe a best available player type thing this year?
I think so, because, you know, while they don't have, you know, a quote-unquote need, I mean, if they have a need, it's that they only have two point guards on the roster, and the backup point guard, DJ Augustine, is going to be a free agent after this season. So, I mean, Presti did this sort of thing. They had Eric Maynard once upon a time, and he drafted Reggie Jackson 24th overall because he could kind of see the writing on the wall there. You know, so having a little bit more security there, I mean, if there is a need, that would be it. But at the same time, I mean, you look at they have a bunch of backcourt players. I mean, they got Jeremy Lamb, they got Dion Waiters, Anthony Morrow, Andre Robertson. They have Josh Eustace again, who may or may not be on the team. So there's a bunch of players there in the backcourt. Even Kyle Singler, who could play a little two guard if you wanted him to. But they don't have the guy. You know what I mean? I mean, they don't have the guy that they can point at and they can say that's the guy that's going to play next to Russell Westbrook. So. I think that's the reason that Presti may take more of a home run look at this and try to swing for the fences and try to go for the best available talent, because, you know, they've changed that philosophy because, you know, it's tough drafting these young players because every young player, 18, 19, 20 years old, they're coming into the NBA with dollar signs in their eyes and superstardom on their minds. I mean, that's what they think. They're going to the NBA and they're thinking about their career. And it's hard to draft a guy and say, look, I know you think all that, but we want you to come in. We want you to play 8 minutes. We want you to play a role. and that's what the Thunder are asking these young players to do. And that's tough. And so that's why I think that they've kind of looked at guys with the high-character players like Andre Robertson, Josh Eustace, Mitch McGarry, that they felt like that they could rely on a guy that's going to buy into a role a little bit more. But in this specific situation, you know, they didn't anticipate, like you guys said at the top of the podcast, they didn't anticipate having a lottery pick. So this is a unique opportunity to actually go back and try to dig in and find that home run guy and try to find some talent.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I think that a lot of people have ended up connecting Cameron Payne to Oklahoma City, just in reports and everything that you hear. There was even one that said that he has a promise from Oklahoma City, which I think is kind of patently absurd, to be honest. But
yeah.
It's very interesting because he is kind of that home run guy and he fills that position of need that you mentioned, point guard. So do you think that that's the direction they go? Do you think they do end up going more on the wing? What are you thinking right now as far as their draft, as far as their draft board, what it might look like?
Yeah, I think that they're looking backcourt. I think if you look at who they were focused on in Chicago at the Combine, I want to say 11 of their 18 interviews, maybe 12 of their 18 was backcourt-oriented players.
Yeah.
I think that they're focused there. You know, I mean, all their you know, the Thunder are notoriously secretive, obviously, about their draft workouts. They don't make them public. But the ones that we have been able to figure out, it's been a lot of, you know, swing men, a lot of backcourt guys. I mean, they've worked some other guys in there. You know, I think recently Bobby Portis worked out for the Thunder. I mean, he's a power forward, and I think that they had another one. Who's the kid from St. John's? Well, you guys know better. Pointer, Dominique Pointer.
Yeah.
I think he worked out for the Thunder recently. He's a power forward, or small forward at least. So, I think that they are focused in the backcourt. If they are going to look somewhere, you know, Presti said recently that they don't want to, you know, box themselves into a position per se. They don't, because, you know, I don't think you can, because, you know, what if they said, well, look, we want Cameron Payne, we want that point guard, and he's our guy. And then all of a sudden, you know, for whatever reason, Willie Cauley-Stein falls to you, or, you know, Stanley Johnson falls to you, or somebody that you feel like, oh, that's just the best player there is. And, you know, then that kind of, you know, reshuffles your board. But I do think that, you know, you mentioned Cameron Payne, and I think that he's a fit for the Thunder. And I think he checks a lot of boxes because it's not that he's just a fit, but he has a lot of upside, a lot of potential, which is something Presti really values. He's got size at the position, and I think he's somebody that could play alongside Russell Westbrook. You know, I think those two guys could play well together in the backcourt. Cameron Payne's got to get bigger. I mean, he's got to get stronger, but that's something that can be fixed. You know, that's one of the easier things to walk into the NBA and fix. So, I think that they'll look in the backcourt.
So a lot of the things that you've mentioned throughout this discussion, it kind of makes me wonder if they might look into a trade, and specifically a trade up, just mm-hmm. because, like you said, they have 15 roster spots. They kind of have a glut of guys in the front court. Like, if you could package something like Steven Adams and, I don't even know, maybe like a Jeremy Lamb or Perry Jones, you could probably move up into the top 10 and possibly get one of those guys, like a Stanley Johnson that you were saying, you know, maybe if that guy fell, or Kelly Oubre, maybe if that guy fell right to you, that could be a thing. Do you think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, I think that basically everything is on the table for the Thunder at this point. Mm-hmm. I think that they could trade out altogether because, you know, they gave up another first-round draft pick. I think it was a 2018 pick in the Enes Kanter deal. So they may be trying to get something back because, you know, with the Thunder, their future, as rock solid as it is, it's also very cloudy. I mean, it's a weird dynamic because, mm-hmm. you know, they may need draft picks more than ever come, you know, 2016, 2017, if some of these players they don't have anymore. So
yeah.
Right now the Thunder don't need first-round picks. I mean, they really don't need them, and they were willing to give them away. That's why they traded away the one for Dion Waiters that they're actually getting to keep now because they lottery-protected it. They traded another one away in the Enes Kanter deal, like I said, but they may need them back at a later time. And so maybe they look to trade this one for a future one or something like that. At the same time, like you said, they do have kind of a cupboard full of players, and something's got to give. I think that history has shown it's tough to move up in the draft. You know, teams tend to ask for a lot. So, I mean, you've got the classic Thunder fan that says, well, I think if you package the 14th pick with Jeremy Lamb and a second-round pick in 2018, you can – but, like, no, it's going to take somebody like a Steven Adams. It's going to take somebody of value to move up in the draft, and if they could kind of circle a guy, you know, I think Kelly Oubre would be a fantastic fit because I think he checks a lot of boxes. Same with Stanley Johnson, or even if you could get way high and get somebody like Justice Winslow, you know, those are the type of players that could be impactful sooner than later, and they could step in and maybe help your rotation. So if that opportunity is there, seeing as the Thunder, you know, need to offload some players anyway. Maybe that's something they look at.
Sam, let's direct a question to you here. As we reach this, say they aren't able to pull off a trade up and they sit at 14, is this the part of the draft where you would say, I know we all have our man crush on Bobby Portis here, but that those point guards are now we're reaching the point where they're kind of the best available players? Is that something that's fair to say here?
Oh, I don't know if they're the best available players, but they're up there at this point. Like guys like Jerian Grant, Cameron Payne, those are the guys that, you know, their value is starting. They're starting to get to the point where they're on the board, even maybe Tyus Jones to a lesser extent. But I would say he's still probably maybe a couple spots away from being great value here. You're looking at guys like Campaign. You're looking at Jerian Grant. You know, if someone like Miles Turner, Kelly Oubre, any of those guys fell, you'd be looking at those guys. And then Bobby Portis, I guess Sam Decker to an extent, although I'm less high on him. You know, guys of that ilk, I would say, is what you're looking at here. There are a lot of options, and I'll be interested to see which direction Royce ends up going here.
I'll direct this to both of you now. Now, I like Jerian Grant a little bit more than Campaign. I actually think Grant reminds me of Reggie Jackson a little bit, but I guess with the Thunder having Dion Waiters now, maybe it makes more sense to have someone who is more of a spot-up game like Campaign, and he's also a little bit younger. How do you guys view those two players versus each other when you're looking at them?
I would say that I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I was watching some video on Jerian Grant the other day, and I kind of noticed the same thing, that, I mean, he's a downhill guy, likes to get to the rim, And he did kind of have some similar characteristics. He's big. He's very athletic and broad shouldered and long arms, kind of like Reggie Jackson. I mean, that you could definitely kind of see the similar characteristics there. And I do know for a fact. I mean, the Thunder have always, and Presti's been very forthcoming with this. They like big guys at position. I mean, they like guys with some size, and so because they like lineup versatility. And the fact that Jerian Grant's 6'4", 6'5", that's something I think that would be important to them. So, I mean, as you do kind of compare them, I think Sam was dead on that as you kind of get into this area in the draft, you kind of have to say that, if you have a need at point guard, it may just be, good luck that, that may be the best players available for you to pick from is going to be the point guards.
Yeah, as far as, pitting Payne against Jerian Grant, it's worth mentioning Jerian Grant's 2 years older. Payne probably a little bit less physical, though. Campaign's measurements are awfully similar to Trey Burke's. They're both in the same max vert range. Campaign has a little bit longer of a wingspan, about an inch and a half longer, but they're about the same height and shoes, same standing reach. So, it's a little bit scary after watching how much Trey Burke has struggled to finish the rim, how much he struggled to even deal with the length whenever he's shooting. He went from being an elite collegiate shooter to an average, I would say, to maybe slightly below average shooter in the NBA just because he had to start dealing with length more often. And, I don't think that's something you're going to have to worry about with Jerian Grant because, Jerian Grant's shot isn't great yet, but he's going to be able to get it off. And you know that you can trust him to get in the lane. You know you can trust him to finish at the rim. You can trust him to get out into transition. The question is just more for me around, who do you trust more to work athletically in the NBA? And I trust Jerian Grant a little bit more to work athletically in the NBA than I do Cameron Payne. I know his passing skills are going to be a little bit stronger than Payne's too. So I would say Grant ahead of Payne despite the 2-year age gap. But it's a tough call, and I could see my guess is that Cameron Payne will go ahead of Jerian Grant on draft night, but I would pick Grant over Payne personally.
Which Royce will bring to you. Who would you like to pick with the 14th pick in the mock draft?
Well, I mean, considering where the board is right now, I've become a Kelly Oubre fan for the Thunder. I don't know why, but he hasn't. He obviously got scooped up already, and Sam just talked me out of what.
I'm not high on Cameron Payne. Some people are high on Cameron Payne. A lot of people are high on Cameron Payne. I mean,
I keep coming back to Cameron Payne just because I think the Thunder, the fact that I think that they want to become a more dynamic, a better passing team. And you just said it, you feel like that maybe Jerian Grant is even a better passer. But what strikes me about Campaign is that he just has really good feel. And
yeah, he does.
I think that you could, putting him next to Russell Westbrook, Westbrook is big, and so, he can guard those two guards. And so I think you can get away with the fact that Payne is a little bit undersized. Like I said, I think he will, obviously he can bulk up and fill out a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say with the 14th pick, the Thunder would have to go with Cameron Payne.
And his spot-up shooting would be a better fit playing next to Westbrook than Grant is. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
I already hate my pick, though. I already hate it.
No. I'm sure that this is going to be what's going to end up looking like the consensus for the Thunder come draft night. I'm sure that Cameron Payne is going to be one of the two most common guys that you see on mock drafts before draft night. Another reason that I do like Jerian Grant for them is a little bit more positional versatility, a little bit more defensive versatility. Both of those guys can guard both ones and twos. And Russell Westbrook being able to guard twos for Cameron Payne is also an advantage for them. So it's something you could slice it a million different ways and come up with a million and one different answers and a million and one different fits if you wanted to. So Campaign's a pretty good pick here, I think. It's one of him or Grant in my mind. I couldn't begrudge you taking either.
Plus, am I the first one that's noticed? And surely not, that if you just say his name, Campaign. I mean, that's an awesome name.
That's his Twitter handle. It's Join My Campaign. Yeah.
I just realized something amazing that it's
Campaign. Well, he should probably be going higher in the draft then. I don't know how
I'd say he's
got
to be top five now. Yeah. Campaign, that's great. That's
Royce, you got anything you'd like to get out there before we let you go?
Not really. I was going to mention also that the Thunder might like RJ Hunter in that spot too, just because I know they've worked him out and he kind of fills a couple needs just because he's a good shooter. I think the Thunder, honestly, I know I'm a little bit biased because I'm here in Oklahoma City and this is a team I'm close to, but I think that their pick is going to be fairly fascinating because, like we talked about, I mean, they could go a number of different ways with this thing. I mean, they could trade up, they could trade down, they could trade out altogether. Or they could take somebody and then that's going to, you know, create a domino effect where they got to make something else happen, you know. So the Thunder's draft pick is going to kind of kick off what I think, well, it's going to be kind of a bland, boring offseason in terms of they don't have any cap space, they're not going to go out and they're not going to really sign anybody. Something's got to give this summer, and it'll start with draft night.
Royce, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And that wraps up another edition of the Amateur Hour Podcast Mock Draft.